hearing the way that we should be hearing, effective hearing. And I forget which one, the class I wanted to discuss effective hearing. But Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes that process as it culminates in experiencing one's relationship with Krishna just through hearing. Which is very nice. And it's from visiting in Vrindavan, it certainly fits the topic of the topics that we discussed while visiting in Vrindavan. Particularly, yeah, I think the last on Christmas evening, I wanted to just complete the Prakrama of Radhakund, because at Radhakund, one of the many, many inspiring features of Radhakund is how so many of our acharyas went there and performed bhajan for some time. And from that bhajan at Radhakund, or just their devotional practices, brought forth wonderful descriptions of Krishna's pastimes. And those wonderful descriptions of Krishna's pastimes aren't poetic imaginations. Raghunath Das Goswami, I better shut up. Raghunath Das Goswami was so absorbed when he was chanting the holy name that he lost all contact with the external world. Rupa Goswami, and he was chanting the holy name. He would experience within his heart pastimes of Radha and Krishna just from chanting the holy name. That's chanting. That's Shuddhanam. And we have, along with chanting, we have practical services that we do. Because we're restless and we can't just chant. So we need practical services to do. And we need to connect those practical services with Krishna. And we connect those practical services with Krishna through consciousness of Krishna, dedicating those activities to Krishna. We get that consciousness of Krishna dedication by hearing. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur describes how to hear effectively. I'm very, very excited to discuss that topic. I'll summarize it if Prahlad can stop making noise up here. I'll summarize it in a simple way. And there's a sequence. One hears instructions. He specifically says, hears instructions from the spiritual master. One takes those instructions within one's heart. And they sit within the lotus of one's heart, or within the core of one's heart, and one contemplates the instructions, how to please Krishna by carrying out this instruction nicely. And when that mood that comes from that contemplation awakens, then one's heart becomes purified. I mean, it's not like in a flash, but one's heart becomes purified. And in that purified condition of heart, then one can absorb one's consciousness fixed in concentration upon the personality of Godhead and one's relationship with Krishna through that fixed concentration upon him becomes awakened. And then you're with, you've just followed Rupa Goswami and Raghunath Das Goswami and the six Goswamis by receiving their instructions in disciplic succession. That's how to hear. That's effective hearing. We'll explore it more. Somewhere along the way of this weekend, there was this question that came up. Sometimes, yes, yesterday in Oswego. Sometimes we hear, and how we process that or how we perceive things is very different than how we hear, and then vice versa. We hear things, we perceive things in a certain way, and it's different than what we're hearing. So why is that, and how to fix that problem? When we have material conceptions of life, when we hear a spiritual sound vibration, Krishna's name or Krishna's teaching or whatever, spiritual sound vibration, it goes through those material filters and it comes out the other side different than the sound vibration. And then we think, yeah, that's it. And we operate with whatever that is. Not even just like this point yesterday evening, that there's a certain group of impersonalists that think Chapter 7, Bhagavad Gita, is proof that it's all one. Or when in Vrindavan I was studying or teaching in the VIHE and took one class that Gopi Pranadana was teaching in Tattva Sandarbha by Jiva Goswami. He now has his translation and commentary by Baladeva Vijibhusan ready to go to the press. We'll get Tattva Sandarbha by Jiva Goswami translated by Gopi very soon. We didn't have that. This was so many years ago. So we're using a translation by Stuart Elkman, who I hope you don't have the misfortune of reading. He got his PhD on his translation of Jiva Goswami's Tattva Sandarbha and Baladeva Vijibhusan's commentary, plus the other, because there's been other commentaries on it. And then he made comments on Baladeva's commentary. And his scholarship was very good. Gopi confirmed that he was just explaining, this is what Jiva Goswami says and this is what Baladeva says about what Jiva Goswami says. And then Viraragava Acharya says and other Acharyas say. And then he would, you know, he was being academically pristine by saying, this is my comment over here about, and he was pointing a bad finger at Baladeva because Baladeva twisted Jiva Goswami's teachings and made it look different than what it really was, and then went back to the commentary. And after he got his PhD in Jiva Goswami's Tattva Sandarbha, he went to Sringeri Math and took sannyas as a Mayavad sannyasi after reading Jiva Goswami's commentary of Tattva Sandarbha. Filters. So it's important, although it's maybe a little less fun, a little more painstaking, but it's important that we make sure that we have proper conceptions of of Krishna. Guaranteed, we've got something other than a correct conception of Krishna, because otherwise we'd be in a different place than we are right now. And one of those conceptions of Krishna that was discussed last night in chapter 9, Bhagavad Gita, is the relationship between Krishna and his cosmic manifestation. It's how it's, he's within it, but he's apart from it. Everything rests in him, everything doesn't rest in him. Da 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 da. Behold my mystic opulence. How to understand that? So we mentioned this, there's a theme there from the first evening. It's not understandable by intellectual, watching the objects move around and figure out how they move around. It's not like that. Oh, this is how Krishna does it. That's how he does it. You have to keep your attention on Krishna. And then, as Krishna is saying this, which contradicts that, your attention is still on Krishna. Well, he's speaking about this, and he's speaking about that, and he's describing his relationship, or the relationship of things with him, his energies. I'd like to read those verses. Chapter 9, texts 4 through 9, and then go to the Bhagavatam, where the same message is explained with a little expanded meaning. So something that I've been increasingly appreciating is how Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam correspond. Prabhupada taught us so that, it's real easy to see from our worldly experience. There's the undergraduate and there's the graduate study. So in the undergraduate study, it's not that there are different principles, but rather there's foundational principles that you then use in different ways in the graduate study. 2 + 2 = 4. And then in algebra, mathematics, trigonometry, and calculus, 2 + 2 = 4. The core principles don't change from Bhagavad Gita to Srimad Bhagavatam, just a more sophisticated explanation is presented. It's a little more complex, but if you understand 2 + 2 = 4, then you can understand the more sophisticated application. And it even works the other way around. By understanding the Bhagavatam, it helps to understand what Krishna is saying in Bhagavad Gita. Or it's like by taking strands of cotton from a cotton ball and you hold them up and see, oh, that's what a cotton strand and all these different cotton strands, and then you pack it back together again in a little cotton ball. Then you understand the cotton ball is made up of a bunch of little cotton strands. In fact, your cloth, that's all it is. Just little strands of whatever the cloth is, whatever the fabric is, that's what it is. Then you stick it in some dye and call it whatever you want to call it, a shirt or pants or a hat or something. But there's some fundamental strands or fundamental essences of Krishna and his relationship with his energies that it's very important to get straight, because otherwise you're not going to hear about Krishna properly. You'll hear something else. When the pure devotee speaks and the pure devotee hears, the one who is not pure is going to speak something else and hear something else. So we're very careful about this matter of who we hear from. I'll spend a little bit of time on that topic because there are things and alternative stuff floating around here and there, and this just little putting a buyer beware tag on hearing from here and hearing from there. Beware. But the buyer beware notice is like, you know, on cigarettes. Surgeon General warns, this can kill you. That's a buyer beware notice. Or, you know, women in pregnancy can have really deformed children if they smoke. Buyer beware. Or lung cancer, and buyer beware. That's it, buyer beware notice. So I'm putting a little tag, buyer beware notice, on things out there that are not in disciplic succession. And they're out there. And persons that aren't trained, that don't understand this little important thing of disciplic succession, go here and go there, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu chastised Mukunda very severely. He should not come in my association ever again because of this tendency. I don't want to be around a person that hears like that, because that affects consciousness, and I don't want to be around a person who has consciousness like that. So we may have like not well-developed consciousness, but if we're careful about where we hear from, that's something else. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu didn't say that about his other associates, but he wanted to teach a lesson to the world that this is not good. Not good. Buyer beware. So, I don't know how many times I've read these verses from Bhagavad Gita, 9:4 through 9, and they're, you can't enter into them by your intellect. Just bounces like a ball against a wall. Just doesn't go in. Because that's not how it's meant to be understood. He's declared it's the most confidential. Not understood by intellectual gymnastics. It's understood by effective hearing. So let's see what happens when we hear these verses of Bhagavad Gita. Prahlad Nisringa, you're going to have to be quiet or find another seat. You got two choices. Okay? Chapter 9, Text 4, Bhagavad Gita. By me, in my unmanifested form, this entire universe is pervaded. And what does he mean by his unmanifested form? Avyaktamurtina. There are different types of unmanifested forms that Krishna has. And one of them is his impersonal Brahman feature. That's unmanifested. Then also the sum total of his material energies is another unmanifested form. By me in my unmanifested form, here it's this, here's what Prabhupada indicates. Here it is said that although he is all-pervading everywhere present, he is not conceivable by the material senses. This is indicated here by the word avyaktamurti. But actually, we cannot see him. Although we cannot see him, everything is resting in him, as we have discussed in the 7th chapter, Bhagavad Gita. The entire cosmic manifestation is only a combination of his two energies, superior and inferior. As the sun shines, is spread all over the universe, the energy of the Lord is spread all over creation, and thus everything is resting in that energy. So it's the form of his energy. It's like the universal form. We don't see the universal form, but it exists. It's his energies. So he says, all beings are in me, but I am not in them. And yet everything that is created does not rest in me. Behold my mystic opulence. What happened? What did he do? Although I am the maintainer of all living entities, although I am everywhere, I am not a part of this cosmic manifestation, for myself is the very source of creation. He holds himself apart from that which he creates. Now this is very important, that sentence. It's going to be explained further in the Bhagavatam, which is what I wanted to talk about today. The relationship between Sambandhagyan, with the relationship between Krishna and his energies. He extends them, but his personal feature stands apart, separated from those energies, but not separated in the sense of like you break off a branch from a tree and disconnect it from the tree, and then it dries up. But Krishna sustains that branch, although it's not that kind of separated. It's a transcendentally separated. He remains aloof by having his energies move through his willing them to move. We can't do that. If I want to drink some water or scratch my head or, you know, reach the cartels or something, I can't just will it. Okay, cartels. We don't have that capacity, but Krishna has that capacity. In Radhakund, there's a very nice pastime amongst unlimited numbers of nice pastimes where we'll narrate it tomorrow evening, but the gist of it is, or one part of this leela is, Krishna creates a drama deliberately where Radha feels man. She develops a mood of anger towards Krishna, which Krishna deliberately orchestrates. He purposely orchestrates like that. And then he comes to see Radha and the gopis say, basically, get out of here. Lalita, headed by Lalita, get out of here. You unreliable person. Get out of here. Our Radha doesn't want to see you. You've made her angry. No, please, please. So Krishna goes away, and he's Radha's feeling, why do I get in moods like this? And Krishna's feeling, you know, separation. So it's orchestrated for separation. We have some nice pictures to go along with this. Purnamasi comes and sees Krishna in a heap. Completely. Ask Krishna what happened, and she says what happened, and he says what happened, and he said, well, we need to make an arrangement for you to have, again, meet with Radha. She's the internal potency. And so, suddenly, Vrindadevi comes, just like at the right time. And Purnamasi asks Vrinda, can you make some arrangements so that Radha and Krishna can meet? She says, oh, definitely. But Krishna has to give up his flute. He has to give up his peacock feather and stop, you know, this whole costume for a cowherd boy. Get rid of it, you know, item by item by item. And then take the garb of a mendicant, a beggar. And she places all the paraphernalia before Krishna. a beggar's costume. But Krishna doesn't have to go to a dressing room and put on a beggar's costume. He just manifests the beggar's form. Because he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. I'll leave you in suspense for the rest of the time. So when we hear that description, we might, a materialist might think, well, that's a nice, creative, imaginative story. Because who can do that? So we can't enter into Krishna's pastimes without understanding Krishna and his potencies. Then that's his spiritual potencies. If we can't understand Krishna's material potencies, how are we going to go there? And so how is it going to strike the mind? It's going to pass through the material filter. And it's going to come out the other side, either mythology or cute story. But, you know, we're going to miss the full transcendental potency. And so, substantial, this the most confidential knowledge chapter, begins with understanding Krishna's and his potencies. It's essential. And how many times can we read this and still not understand it? I can vouch many times. Many times. Then he helps us to understand. Understand that as the mighty wind blowing everywhere, rests always in the sky, all created beings rest in me. That's how it works. And we did this the other evening, we'll do it again. Wind, this is Chicago, wind is blowing. I heard last night 88 mile an hour winds on Lake Michigan. Our historian Jitendri was telling us. Record-breaking winds. But the sky wasn't moving at all, because the sky is more subtle. That's how it works. The sky, within the sky is the air, and the air can be still or moving. In either case, the sky is unaffected, because it's more subtle. Okay, now in the same way, everything rests in Krishna because he's more subtle. So everything is within him, like everything within the sky, but he's outside of everything. Because he's, so like confidential, more he's the most confidential, he's the most subtle, he's the source of Brahman, and Brahman is everything rests in Brahman. And we can't know Krishna except through devotion. That's like that's a metaphor, and now we're still looking at what Krishna is saying through the lens of a metaphor. It's still on, you know, Gyan Mishra Bhakti. We can't know Mishra Bhakti. Gyan Mishra Bhakti may give us, it's like the example of a window. You can see what's on the other side of the wall because of the window, but you're not on the other side of the wall. To enter into the spiritual world requires having a proper conception and having faith in Krishna. And when one has faith in Krishna, Krishna imparts the Dhammi Buddhi Yoga. He gives us the understanding how we can come to him, how we can understand him, how we can have real devotion for him. It is automatically manifested again and again, and under my will it is annihilated at the end. Oh, Dhananjaya, all this work cannot bind me. I'm ever detached from all these material activities, seated as though neutral. Now, 10th chapter of Canto 2 is answers by citing the Lord's version. It's answering a whole bunch of questions. that Maharaj Pariksit asked of Sukadeva Goswami, a whole chapter of questions and a whole chapter of answers, plus two more cantos to answer all those questions. And embedded within those two cantos are further questions on those questions by Vidura asking Maitreya. The Bhagavatam just unfolds like that. Not in a linear way, it just unfolds like a flower. So I want to read the punchline verse, and then we'll go back. Text 45 is the punchline verse. Or we're going to put a pointer on this verse. There is no direct engineering by the Lord for the creation and destruction of the material world. What is described in the Vedas about his direct interference is simply to counteract the idea that material nature is the creator. Now, go back to chapter 9, where Krishna says, in chapter 3, I send forth generations of men and demigods, and with them this sacrifice, bless them, saying, be thou happy by the sacrifice. He's doing things that are involved with creation. Here again in the ninth chapter, he's doing things involved with creation. At the end of the millennium, all material manifestations enter into my nature, and at the beginning of another millennium, by my potency, I create them again. It says, so the relationship between material nature and Krishna is his will. By his will, things move. Krishna doesn't even have to say it. He just wills it. And it happens. Because his willing potency is so powerful. So Krishna wants to transform himself from a cowherd boy into a beggar. Boom. If Krishna wants generations of men and demigods, boom. Krishna wants to withdraw them, boom. Krishna wants to hold them. Krishna wants to release them. Krishna wants to bind them. Krishna wants to deliver them. By my will, under my will, it is automatically manifested again and again, and under my will it is annihilated at the end. All this work cannot bind me. I'm ever detached from all these material activities, seated as though neutral. There's commentary on, you know, as though neutral. He's neutral. But he's not neutral in the sense of I don't care. These are his part and parcel living entities. He cares. Not that kind of neutrality or detached. Neutral in the sense of he's not directly involved, but through his willing potency, the material energy moves. And that material energy moves according to the regard living entities have towards him. And according to how, so their so what conception we have of the Supreme is really important. As far as what our experience of life is going to be. The configuration of the material energy will move according to our conception and our regard toward Krishna. So, the verse again, there is no direct engineering by the Lord for the creation and destruction of this material world. what is described in the Vedas about his direct interference is simply to counteract the idea that material nature is the creator. Now, this is 5,000 years ago written by Vyasadeva. Fast forward till today. What would the bastion of academia want us to understand? What is the source of creation? It's material nature. There's two things, or you could say one thing. All there is laws of nature and matter, or matter that works under the laws of nature. That's all there is. And they've got the power base. They've got the money to decide the research. They've got the media to decide, what's good and what's not good. They've got a chokehold on modern society. That idea. It's not just the prevalent idea. Any other idea gets severely knocked down or tucked under the rug or something. People make challenges because that's part of academia. But, that predominant view is the predominant view. And it filters down from the... It's Kali Yuga, so the would-be brahmanas are up there in this chokehold position. And then, those that are the administrators of society who are elected by the voters, they promise the voters sense gratification, and they engage the intellectuals in figuring out how to get sense gratification for the voters. Yuck. Bad system. So here we are, Hare Krishna folks, trying to, go forward on the path of devotional service to Krishna. And there's opposition in different arenas. On the street there's opposition, and in academia there's opposition, and in governance there's opposition. There's certain freedoms. You can express your views. Freedom of speech and freedom of religion, to a certain extent. That's nice. There's some places that doesn't exist. But that freedom also has a price. Madhouse. It's part of the price. And, the persons... I don't want to do too much of a social commentary here, but persons with the power, that's the way the flow goes. Look at India. Which way is the flow going in India? Very clear. Watching it happen is awesome. China, what's happening? It's awesome. And who's putting on the brakes? Kali Yuga. It's very important for thoughtful persons to exercise their thoughtfulness. And the Bhagavatam is specifically for this age of Kali, where Janata Agha, persons are in general very sinful. Duskriti, they're prone to sinful activity. Whether they know better or they don't know better, they're prone to sinful activity. And it's tough out there. The atmosphere is surcharged with opposition, is Prabhupada's phrase. And somehow in that medium, we're to practice Krishna consciousness. And the Bhagavatam is the light that can take us through this dark forest of material existence into the transcendental realm. And one can experience movement towards the transcendental realm if one regularly abides with the Bhagavatam, hears the message and assimilates the message, this happens, the assimilation happens naturally. It's very, very potent medicine. There's a very nice verse in the Bhagavatam that says that this message of the Srimad Bhagavatam is like a highly potent drug, Prabhupada's commentary, injected intravenously within the system in one section, the whole system. Bhavochadach Shrotra Manobhiramat, and brings happiness to the mind, because, you know, it's a spiritual mind, because it's contact with this, with Krishna through sound vibration. It's the antidote or the medicine for the material disease of Kali Yuga, and brings a natural sense of I'm in contact with Krishna, kind of happiness, a spiritual happiness. That makes it, when that spiritual happiness is being experienced, it makes it really easy to say no thank you to so many allurements of the madness of Kali Yuga. No thank you. And it's effective for helping us be preachers, to introduce others to this life of Bhagavat Dharma. Because, you see, we're experiencing happiness, and they know what they're experiencing, if they're a little self-honest. That's the most convincing preaching strategy, is to be happy in Krishna consciousness. So, back to Sambandha. The Bhagavatam 5,000 years ago is also addressing the fact that persons at that time, our acharyas speak like this. Even in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is specifically addressing prevalent ideologies of the time, of his time, in certain verses of the Bhagavad Gita. And here also, the material conception, it's as old as the hills. It's as old as time, material time. The idea that of Gautama Rishi, great Rishi, but his idea was from the Vedas that the primordial essence of life is the atom and operating by the laws of nature. Hey, that's what starting with text 36. He, the personality of Godhead, manifests himself in a transcendental form, being the subject of his transcendental name, quality, pastimes, entourage, and transcendental variegatedness, although he is unaffected by all such activities. He appears to be so engaged. We'll even go back a couple more. Krishna is speaking about creation. Excuse me, Shukadeva Goswami is speaking about creation. And he is describing many, many verses how the Lord performs creation. And then he says this constitutes his universal form. Then he says, beyond this gross manifestation is a transcendental manifestation, finer than the finest form, Brahman. It has no beginning, no intermediate stage, and no end. Therefore, it is beyond the limits of expression. Mystical. Nirvachaniya. You can't even speak about it. It's so mystical. Or mental speculation. It is distinct from the material conception. Brahman. Not neti neti. By intellectual approach, one can, by the neti neti process, one can get an idea of, by speculation, not by experience, what is Brahman. It's not this, and it's not this, and it's not this. Definition by negation, Prabhupada says, is just the flip side of the same coin. It's not tails. What's heads? It's not tails. Then, neither of the above forms of the Lord, as just described unto you, from the material angle of vision, is accepted by the pure devotees of the Lord, who know him well. He, the personality of Godhead, manifests himself in a transcendental form, being the subject of his transcendental name, quality, pastimes, entourage, transcendental variegatedness, although he is unaffected by all such activities. That's his activities of appearing and his lila, janma karma chame divyam. Although he's unaffected by all such activities, he appears to be so engaged. Then there's a cluster of verses, long list. Shukadeva Goswami says, O King, know from me that all living entities are created by the Supreme Lord. Operative word, created by the Supreme Lord. Later he's going to say, all this idea of his creating things is to negate the idea that material nature alone creates. When we think of the Lord's creating, we should not think of, it's like when we do something, like scratch our head. He can scratch his head without moving his arm. Go ahead, try. Play cartels without moving your hands. It's more subtle than the most subtle. It's more subtle, it's more confidential than Brahman. And then there's the most confidential. The Bhagavatam wants to take us there as Krishna is describing it in the Bhagavad Gita 9th chapter. So then there's the statement, O King, know from me that all living entities are created by the Supreme Lord. Read, by his potencies. By his will, those potencies create all living entities according to their past deeds. This includes Brahma and his son Daksha, the periodical heads of like Vaivasvata Manu, the demigods like Indra, Chandra, Varuna, the great sages like Bhrigu, Vasishta, and Vyas, the inhabitants of Pitraloka and Sintaloka, the Charanas, Gandharvas, Vidyadharas, Asuras, Yakshas, Kinnaras, and angels, the serpentines, the monkey-shaped king purushas, the human beings, the inhabitants of Matraloka, the demons, pishachas, ghost spirits, lunatics, and evil spirits, the good and evil stars, the goblins, the animals in the forest, the birds, the household animals, the reptiles, the mountains, the moving and standing living entities, the living entities born from embryos, from eggs, from perspiration, from seeds, and all others. Whether they be in water, land, or sky, in happiness, in distress, or mixed happiness and distress, all of them, according to their past deeds, are created by the Supreme Lord. According to the different modes, so now we get, it's like a zoom lens is going to go into that statement. According to the different modes of material nature, goodness, passion, and mode of darkness. There are different living creatures who are known as demigods, human beings, and hellish living entities. O King, even a particular mode of nature, being mixed with the other two, is divided into three. And thus, each kind of living creature is influenced by the other modes. and acquires its habits also. Like, nothing is pure in this world. He, the personality of Godhead, as the maintainer of all the universe, appears in different incarnations after establishing the creation, and thus he reclaims all kinds of conditioned souls amongst the humans, the non-humans, and the demigods. So creation, he enters, maintains. Thereafter, at the end of the millennium, the Lord himself, in the form of Rudra, the destroyer, will annihilate the complete creation as the wind displaces the clouds. The great transcendentalists thus describe the activities of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but the pure devotees deserve to see more glorious things in transcendence beyond those features. Now, then comes this next verse, our point of attention verse. All these explanations described in the Vedas are simply to counteract the idea that material nature is the creator. It's like Achintya Beda Beda Tattva, and when you speak about Beda, you should bear in mind the Abeda is also at play. Or when the Abeda is spoken about, the Beda is also at play. So when emphasis is, language is used in the Bhagavatam to say the Lord creates, know it to be for this purpose. It's not the material nature creates. Although Krishna speaks in Bhagavad Gita that all this is being done by material nature. The kartritvam the karmani lokasya srijate prabho. The learned person understands everything is being conducted by material nature. But material nature doesn't act independently. Material nature acts under Krishna's direction. So he's the director. It's like everything's under remote control. You know, we see planets moving around in space. It's under Krishna's control. He creates them and controls them by remote control. He doesn't even need, like, you know, electrical engineers and people to, you know, figure out how to do it. He just wills it. So we may, you know, this scientist here may be moving their satellites and so they can send their signals and da-da-da-da. And they control those satellites, but Krishna doesn't control all the planets. And even where does their ability to control that little satellite come from? Krishna takes that ability away, it's over. The whole show is over. If Krishna withdraws the whole show, it's over. It's over. So there's abundance of misconceptions. Material nature is life comes from matter is one of those misconceptions. The Bhagavatam wants to help us smash that misconception. So there's detailed, you can say, a spiritual scientific explanation of how it does happen from a creator. While we're hearing that, the Bhagavatam wants to train us that we don't take it in a material way. He's maxed out like we get. Well, we got so much to do, we can't handle it all. Krishna's isn't like that. Krishna's in the spiritual world playing his flute. Playing joyfully with the cowherd boys. Enjoying wonderful pastimes. Yet everything that's going on is happening by his potency. So he just expands himself. Mahavishnu, Parvadaksha, is Purusha avatars, while Krishna is enjoying in the spiritual world. He's aloof in that sense. Yet, still, nothing happens without his willing. And then, it's like the metaphor of the ninth chapter, like the wind is blowing in the vast sky, so everything is resting in me. He's the most subtle. He's the cause of all other causes. That's the relationship between Krishna and his potencies. There's this little technical innuendo share with you that's out there in the world of theology. There's a theistic and a deistic conception of God. One, the deistic conception of God is God creates and then it's on its own. The theistic conception is God creates and he continues to control that which he creates. The deistic conception is like that of a watchmaker. He makes the watch, it sells, somebody buys the watch, and that's it. The watchmaker doesn't have any ongoing relationship with the watch. It's just a machine that he creates. And the theistic conception is he continues to involve himself with that which he creates. And ours is not exactly either one of those. It's a Chintya Veda Beta conception. He's both involved and not involved. And people will say, well, come on, make up your mind. Nothing happens without the sanction of the Supreme Lord. That's the theistic conception. At the same time, he's seated as though neutral. He's not, you know, bothered by all this work that needs to be done. His potencies are doing, but not his potencies. The potency doesn't work without potent. It's subtle. And you know, try to hold all that in your computer and you have a crash of your hard drive. But with devotion, if you hear the message that Krishna is speaking with your mind absorbed in Krishna, then it's just appreciation of Krishna. And with that mind absorbed in Krishna, when things, now you're into the, you know, back on the street or in the office or living your day-to-day life, and things start to come your way, you can see them in relation to Krishna. And you can serve Krishna in any circumstance of life and feel the presence of Krishna in a life of devotion. And otherwise, it's the secular life, which is really crummy. I mean, it's not reality either. It's a mental adjustment. And you're moving between the two worlds, and people say this all, how do I balance? And the answer is you don't balance. Be Krishna conscious. Be Krishna conscious. Whether you're worshipping your deity and chanting your rounds and hearing the Bhagavatam, or you're in the office, or in your social circumstance, you're serving Krishna. Make that connection, Krishna connection, very strong. Then you'll always you'll feel transcendental happiness. It's everlasting and joyfully performed. And you sign out with Krishna, and it's not fun anymore. It's a battle. It's a struggle. It's something else. And that's Maya. That's the Dr. Agarwal's Maya. He wants to blame Maya, but it's choosing to forget Krishna. Prabhupada taught this. The forgetfulness of Krishna is a conscious choice, moment to moment. We may not be appreciating or aware, but it's a moment-to-moment choice. We can choose at any moment to remember Krishna. Or we can choose at any moment to check out, be inattentive to Krishna, be complacent, be an enjoyer, be a controller, be a competitor of Krishna. We can choose that. Or we can recognize that's not a good program. Fundamentally, it's not a good program. Just delete that program. And take the shelter of Krishna program. And serve Him in everything that we do. So these material conceptions that life comes from matter has all kinds of downstream consequences. Like, we want to control matter because we want the consequences to be what we want. We want enjoyment. We don't want suffering. So we need to get out there and control those valves and gears and motors to get it to where we want it. And the devotee is thinking, let me serve Krishna. It's a whole other approach. And the conceptions that we carry dynamically affect how we approach life and situations that come our way. I'd like to read from the purport. It's a very nice purport by Srila Prabhupada. The Vedic direction for the creation, maintenance, and destruction of the material world is this. Yatova imani bhutani jayante yena jatani jivanti yat pratyantyabhi yabasham vishanti, etc. Everything is created by Brahman. And after creation, everything is maintained by Brahman. And after annihilation, everything is conserved in Brahman. Gross materialists, without any knowledge of Brahman, or Paramatma, or Bhagavan, conclude material nature to be the ultimate cause of the material manifestation. And the modern scientist also shares this view, that the material nature is the ultimate cause of all manifestations of the material world. This view is refuted by all Vedic literature. The Vedanta philosophy mentions that Brahman is the fountainhead of all creation, maintenance, and destruction. And Srimad Bhagavatam, the natural commentation on Vedanta philosophy, says, Janmadyasya Yaton Vayad Itaratash Charteshu Avigya Swarat, etc. Paragraph. Inert matter is undoubtedly energy with potential to interact, but it has no initiative of its own. Srimad Bhagavatam therefore comments on the aphorism Jadmadyasya by saying Avigya and Svarat, that is, the Supreme Brahman is not inert matter, but He is Supreme Consciousness and is independent. Therefore, inert matter cannot be the ultimate cause of the creation, maintenance, and destruction of the material world. Now this is where consciousness studies becomes an interesting thing. The material scientists are doing their consciousness studies, and it gets really subtle, because their program is, their material scientists' predisposition, their paradigm is matter creates consciousness, or whatever we want to call consciousness. It's but an interaction of matter, because you can't measure spirit, but you can measure the effect of spirit in the form of consciousness, and it has certain effects. Anyway, it gets real down and dirty, I can tell you. Superficially, material nature appears to be the cause of creation, maintenance, and destruction, but material nature is set into motion for the creation by the Supreme Conscious Being, the Personality of Godhead. He is the background of all creation, maintenance, and destruction, and this is confirmed in Bhagavad Gita chapter 9. Text number 10, Maya Jakshena Prakriti Suyate Sacharacharam Hetu Nanani Konteya Jagati Parivartate. Material nature is but one of the energies of the Lord, and she can work under the direction of the Lord. Adyakshena. When the Lord throws his glance over material nature, then only can the material nature act as a father contacts the mother, who is then able to conceive a child. Although it appears to the layman that the mother gives birth to the child, the experienced man knows that the father gives birth to the child. The material nature therefore produces the moving and standing manifestations of the material world after being contacted by the Supreme Father, and not independently. Considering material nature to be the cause of creation, maintenance, etc., is called the logic of the nipples on the neck of a goat. Then, Aja Gala Stana Nyaya, explained by Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur Maharaj, quote. The material nature, as the material cause, is known as pradhan, and the efficient cause is known as maya. But since it is inert matter, it is not the remote cause of creation. Anyway, it gets really technical. Remote cause, efficient cause, whew. Material cause. So, the pradhan. Anyway, I won't go there. The basic idea is you can go further into this. It's described in Chaitanya Charitamrita. There's Nimitta Maya and Upadhan Maya. Nimitta Maya, they're both features of the material energy. One is that which provides the space, and that which provides the ingredients. It's like the comparison is the womb of the mother does both, supplies the space for the child to grow and supplies the ingredients for the child. But wombs of mothers don't just produce children independently. The features of space and elements are activated by a remote cause or efficient cause. And that's the Supreme. The method is his glance, but whatever the method is, however he wants to choose, he activates matter. And then when matter is activated, it appears to be alive. We're alive. But then when the soul leaves, it's dead. But actually, it means actually it's dead. It only appears to be alive. So what existed before it appears to be alive, we can't say, because we weren't around. But Krishna was around, and he can say. And he's the cause. That's 10th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. So these things, just in short, these things can't be understood without faith, and they can't be understood without hearing them from one who knows. You can't know. You can't know. You can guess. Perhaps maybe it was like this. It seems to me, by inference, the most logical explanation is da-da-da-da-da-da. And post-data check, very soon we'll prove it. We're going to create life. Because we know the secrets of life. We're doing our stem cell research very thoroughly, and we'll be able to generate life. You watch. We'll unravel the secrets of life and God disappears because we can do it ourselves. Very demoniac. Big time demoniac. So, this will help us understand why even 5,000 years ago, what to speak of in Prabhupada's teachings in current times, Vyas and the Bhagavatam wanted us to clearly understand, and Shukadeva Goswami wanted Maharishi Pariksit to clearly understand the spiritual conception of God, the spiritual conception of Krishna, not some weak, sentimental conception of God as something else. So many varieties of something else's. We should have a very clear conception. It will help us to come in the spontaneous realm of devotion, in the realm of love of God. We read that the gopis and the residents of Vrindavan, they didn't even know that Krishna was God, and they didn't care to know about Krishna as God. They just loved Krishna. So in that mood, they served Krishna. We're not there. And that's that passage that I read on whatever it was, the evening that I came. Saturday evening. But the Shrutis in the prayers by the personified Vedas were being offered a benediction by the personality of Godhead because he was so pleased by their elevated prayers. And they said what they wanted. They wanted to come to that stage of spontaneous love, although they were fixed in knowledge. So it's by mercy, but you know, they had some qualification to get that mercy. And we need some of that qualification. We need some purity. We need purity to enter into the presence of the Supreme Pure. We're not eligible otherwise. We should try very carefully to follow the Srimad Bhagavatam's message, the path given to us by Srimad Bhagavatam, preluded by the messages of Bhagavad Gita, and enter into the mysteries of Krishna in the spiritual world, starting with having a clear understanding of him, how he's in our lives today. And while he's in our lives today, at the same time, he's in the spiritual world calling for us to come to him. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki. Any questions? Discussion? Yes.
One thought that was coming.
Go ahead, you're on.
One thought that was coming to me was just appreciation of Krishna's renounced position, his renunciation.
Yeah.
Because not being directly involved in things that were going on, he's not just trying to manipulate things for some kind of, you know, personal. It's easy to think of God in the way that we are, because we would be fixing things so that they would come off the way that we'd want them to. So, but he lets us try to fulfill our desires. So,
yeah.
That seems to me to be a greatly misunderstood feature of God, or quality of God, that he is renounced and satisfied without having to be involved, yet he does come mercifully to give us the opportunity to be attracted to go back to him. So,
mm-hmm.
Is there anything more in that that we can understand?
Well, we can always expand upon that idea and so many other ideas, but I think you expressed it very nicely. I'll add to what you're saying, and that is, we need to have such a quality. We need to be loving, at the same time not controlling in our exhibition of love. When we care deeply about another, there's a tendency to want to control. That's not what love is. It's a challenge to be deeply caring and not controlling. You can't, like, you know, put it on like a set of clothes either, or, you know. It has to be a part of character. It has to come from being in a transcendental position, a transcendental kind of caring. Not the kind of caring that says, I want you to be in a certain way because that makes me happy. And after all, my happiness is really the bottom line. And that kind of thinking, my happiness is in terms of sense gratification, not in terms of Krishna's happiness. That's a material conception. So getting to that kind of loving relationship with others very much is dependent upon our loving relationship with Krishna. Then they grow together. And it's, you know, most of us conditioned souls have our attention go far more to our relationship with others than our relationship with Krishna. Which says something about our relationship with Krishna. And it also says something about our relationship with others. It's more selfish than it is loving. We have to learn from Krishna. We have to become attached to Krishna. And just as you articulated, not only appreciate that feature of Krishna, but emulate it as much as we can. The currency is our love for Krishna, our attachment for Krishna.
You said that it's very, very important to know who God is and the features of God. But we also know that we would not be able to know Krishna unless He reveals it. So how is hearing going to help us if Krishna Himself doesn't reveal it?
The answer to that is Krishna does reveal through the process of our hearing. That's the answer to that one. Are you seeing a separate, let's turn your question around into a question. Is your understanding that when we just read some verses from Bhagavad Gita, that's something other than Krishna speaking? Okay.
But for me, revelation, what I understand is like, I implement the instructions, I see things happening, and then I realize that so this is true. So that's how revelation comes. Unless I don't implement, how do I realize it?
Okay. And we'll go back a step or two, and that says, and the step or two says, what you hear is through filters. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And so what you're going to apply is what you hear, which is through filters. So even that realization that you get is quite limited from what a pure devotee might get, because they don't have so many filters, or they have no filters. So it's a gradual process, in short. But the topic when it's, I can't remember, I guess it's tomorrow midday, I think it's tomorrow midday, the topic of effective hearing goes more deeply into what you just said about how to get realizations. How that's based upon the hearing process. I'll say it again. I said it at the beginning. Say it again tomorrow. More in depth tomorrow. Hearing, receiving, reflecting, and then here's the operative part: contemplating how to put this into my life, how to put it into the world of action. It's that contemplation in the mood of service that brings about the purification. And when that purification, then we can act in a corrected way from what we were doing before we heard with that contemplation. And then there can be in a more purified condition, thought of Krishna can be there in our mind uninterruptedly. That's what we want. Because then, in that condition, we can serve Krishna. You know, the prompts then just come from within, or come from Krishna directly. But those prompts that come through hearing Krishna's message, it looks like it's from the outside, but actually it's Krishna or Krishna. And now what's our relationship with Krishna? The relationship should be his humble servant. But Krishna is indicating something, some service that he wants.
So Krishna reveals through hearing and also through revelation.
But it's not separating the two. You won't get realization of Krishna, we'll say full realization of Krishna without effective hearing. And presently we're doing something short of effective hearing. So we want to get to that stage. In Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's explanation of this, the role of the spiritual master is jugular, it's critical. So we'll do that part tomorrow. Someone else? Something?
I don't know how personal it is, but I'm thinking demigods who carry out Krishna's will in this material world.
Can you speak up so they can hear you in the back?
The demigods who carry out Krishna's will in this material world?
Yes.
Are not pure devotees themselves, or the devotees but mixed?
They're mixed devotees.
But we understand that pure devotees are fully controlled by Rishikesha. But the demigods, if they're not pure devotees, how do they fully and absolutely carry out Krishna's will exactly as he wants it if they're not pure?
Well, but like, you know, Varuna's agent that kidnapped Nanda Maharaj. Not that Varuna wanted that to happen, but it happened under Varuna's jurisdiction. But it's not like Krishna got mad at him or something. Krishna came to rescue his father and gave his darshan to Varuna. Varuna was very happy, very apologetic, and then worshipped Krishna. I would say one thought on your question is, we should be very careful about the risk of disrespecting elevated personalities as the demigods and the residents of the heavenly planets. We respect them. At the same time, we recognize their position is not that of pure devotion, and therefore the confidential service that they have is less than the residents of Goloka. But they're still servants, sincerely serving with their desires to control something. And because of that, there's mistakes along the way. Just like ourselves. There's mistakes along the way. And our business is not, you know, you made this, oh, look at so many, this mistake, that mistake. That's a good program. Shouldn't do that with the demigods either. We should recognize there's a difference. It's just like in Alachua, before coming here, the section that they were reading from in the Bhagavatam was prayers by the demigods to Lord Nrsimhadev. And I gave class on a couple of verses. One was Indra speaking and another was the sages speaking. And I commented, and I heard that since I left there, they're continuing along the same theme, that each of the demigods are offering wonderful prayers, but contrast those prayers with Prahlad's prayers. And with Prahlad's prayers, we get the prayer of a pure devotee. And the others, including the sages, very elevated prayers, but there's some, you know, their consciousness is in the prayer. And those prayers of the demigods didn't calm down the anger of Lord Nrsimhadev. So our business is not fault finding, but seeing there's a distinction. That's what we're supposed to do. Discernment between mixed and pure, and go the path of pure. Let go of our own impurity on the path of purity. That's what's important for us. So your question was, how can they discriminate and how can they get the job done? They get the job done by Krishna's helping them get the job done. They're like, how do we get things done? Krishna helps us. But the service of the cowherd boys is even more intimate and confidential, and therefore to be in that role, or whatever, one of the associates of Krishna, one requires this purity of devotion. So Rupa Goswami very kindly is taking us by the hand and pointing the path of pure devotion and taking us down the path of pure devotion from the very beginning. He's rescuing us from that mixed devotion idea. Ekat vena pratakta vena bahuda, just like the Bhagavatam is doing. There's worship of universal form. That's how the second canto starts. And by the end, even by the third chapter, it's one need not worship the universal form, and that is like confirmed again. One need not worship beyond the universal form, beyond this conception of Brahman, the personality of Godhead. And how the personality of Godhead creates is being explained, but then we're cautioned, that's to help us make sure it's very clear it's not the material nature that's creating. Brahma's prayer was, when he was asked for benediction, it was, when I'm doing my creating, let me not fall prey to false ego, thinking, oh, what a good creation I've done. which means any one of us. You know, what a nice offering I made. What a nice something I did. Let us pray to Krishna for protection from that. And instead enter into the realm of pure devotion. Anything else? Yeah?
Please forgive me if the question is inappropriate, but I wanted to know, is it possible that, you know, we are serving Krishna in this life, so can we keep taking birth and keep on serving Krishna instead of going?
If Krishna wants, we can do that.
Okay.
That's Lord Chaitanya's prayer. Mama janmani janmanishvare bhavatad bhakti arhaita kitvai. But while certainly if Krishna so desires, and that's Lord Chaitanya's teaching, at the same time Prabhupada taught that in our stage of Krishna consciousness, it's very good to desire to go back to Godhead. And when one becomes fully purified, then one can pray like Lord Chaitanya prayed. As you wish. Birth after birth. I remember as a young devotee, you know, being very, it's called Utsaha Mayi, where one thinks as a beginning, like a beginning student, think, I've mastered all of my subjects. So, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says, in beginning stage of devotion, one may also think, I am on this platform where I just want to go on serving Krishna. So, that's a very elevated state. To genuinely have that condition is the condition of Mahabhagavata. We're not there. Our Srila Prabhupada has encouraged us back home, back to Godhead. Desire to be with Krishna is good for us, desiring like that. A better challenge than the one that you mentioned is, while I'm in this lifetime at least, because I am here now, with the next lifetime, I don't know. But while I'm here, let me try to serve Krishna in such a way, Krishna will be so happy. And maybe that will mean he'll say, oh, you're really good at this, you stay here. Okay. But that I don't know. This much I do know. I can try to serve Krishna so nicely. And the limitation is my impurity. So let me address that. Because Krishna is all powerful, and Krishna's all powerfulness can come through one who's pure. And I'm not pure, so I need to become pure. So Krishna's potency can be manifest in this realm through us, through me, and through us collectively. Something else? Yeah?
I was very much moved by what you said about the gradual process of hearing the instruction of the spiritual master and then taking it in one's heart and contemplating it and then becoming purified. So I was trying to frame my question, and I was thinking about this contemplation. So I notice that sometimes when I'm contemplating, I'm not able to complete the contemplation, or like as you often sometimes say, one has to be able to follow that chain of thought and complete the contemplation. So I'm not able to do that. And as I was thinking about, you know, framing the question properly, thinking, so this contemplation can be done in different levels, like by oneself, consulting other Vaishnavas or the spiritual master. So, Could you elaborate?
You think you did a good job. There's different. Contemplating is a stage or a phase, or and then it can be manifest in multiple ways. And at different times and different circumstances, one way be more appropriate. In association, it's always nice, but in association can be like being lazy. Can you think this through for me because I'm lazy? Can you decide for me because I don't want to decide? But it can be different. It can be seeking some further indication. It also depends upon the magnitude of the topic. Like one devotee in this assembly is contemplating a destination of career. And that's major. That's weighty. So involving other persons, not abandoning that decision, but involving other persons that different can help access or resource, or that's very helpful. For example,
and when does this enough times, then one can even trust one's own contemplations, and that
we always want to confirm our contemplations, at least by scripture. Okay? Yes, Hare Krishna.
It appears that we have some appreciation for pure devotee. In that case, when I hear from them, I feel that whatever they are telling is perfect. But in practical life, I'm not able to increasingly take steps. So where should we work?
He supplied at least a partial answer to that. If there's some And Krishna expresses that, or rather I should say, in our explanation of faith yesterday evening, you were there? Oh. And where there's faith, faith is not just some sentiment, but it's practical. So where there's faith, then where's the exhibition of that faith? The faith should come in the form of some practical action. And so between the experience of feeling faith and then practical action, there's this space of contemplation. But then action. I'll magnify that a little bit more. I haven't read this scripturally, but it's something that I've understood over time, that a feature of the quality of goodness, this is scriptural, it's described as being pensive or thoughtful. So there's a point where something is coming your way, and you've got to do something about that something that's coming your way. You have to make a decision. Krishna is telling Arjuna, kill Ashwatthama. He's got to do something. Then there's some contemplation. The mode of passion that squeezes the mode of goodness right out of existence, and it's just, you act impulsively. Thinking I'm right because, you know, of course I'm right, otherwise I wouldn't have acted. And I'm me besides that. So of course I'm right. But the mode of goodness is reflective. One considers choices of action and choices of how that action can be performed, and different outcomes based upon how that action can be performed. And that's a feature of goodness. Then action. Because bhakti is practical. Not just a feeling. There's feeling. But that feeling stays when we stay connected to the, you know, to Krishna and to the persons who have given us the inspiration. How to serve. What services to do. We stay with a sense of gratitude with those persons. And we stay with them. We, you know, we don't leave Krishna to go now do our something. We carry thought of Krishna with us. So, your statement was, when I associate with pure devotees, they feel inspired that they have the right message. Then it takes these next phases, considering very carefully, and then bringing it in, using a phrase of one of my godbrothers, bringing it to the world of action. As a demonstration of that faith and a demonstration of gratitude for that gift of transcendental understanding that's been given. Which can include, it doesn't necessarily mean a major external change, it can be a quality internal change. Here he comes. A nice example of this is in Brihat Bhagavatamrita, a really transcendental example, is Gopal Kumar having so many experiences here and there and here and there and, you know, really far out places. And my memory serves me right. He's in the Shiva realm of Shiva Loka, where there's this impersonal feature seems to draw him in. And just as he gets like he's going to lose himself, he takes shelter of Madan Gopal and it goes away. And then comes again. So at different points, he just takes shelter. And rather than being in a position where it seems so nice, he feels, I would be ungrateful to my spiritual master if I didn't achieve the full purpose that this mantra, Madan Gopal mantra that he gave me, is meant to achieve. At a sense of deep personal gratitude that prompts action and transformation and growth, spiritual growth. Very powerful transforming agent. To take that sense that, as you just described, this pure devotee or these pure devotees have really got, they got the real thing. take that into as a feeling, contemplate how you can act on it in a practical way, and then carrying that contemplation of expressing your gratitude, let your service come out as an expression of gratitude. Then you're not taking credit. In your consciousness, they're getting all the credit. You're just like zooming along, going for the ride on the strength of their association. Others? Question? Okay, thank you very much. The Prabhupada Ki Jai.